Hey everyone, welcome back to Rally Caps. It's a podcast for artists, entrepreneurs, and everybody in between. I'm Steven.
I'm Eric.
And I'm Gene.
And today we've got a fun, probably part one of two episodes, a little mini series for Rally Caps, on the general topic of creativity needing boundaries. In this first part today, we're going to discuss the specifics of our thoughts on why creativity really thrives underneath specific boundaries and limitations. Use some examples from the portfolio that the three of us have built together with some commercial work and other projects that we've done, and kind of, I guess, almost kind of like push back a little bit on the idea of like client work being annoying or crappy, or like, I feel like we've all had like jaded perspectives towards the clients in the past. And even if it's justified or not, I think it's kind of fun to maybe like push back on some of those notions and try to find the silver linings in them. And we're going to talk about all of that today. So let's get into it.
Yeah.
Let's do it.
Let's do it, guys.
Go team.
And before we do, hey, if you are listening to the show right now and you have listened to it for a number of years, but you haven't left a review or a rating for the show, please do that right now. We would love and appreciate the support so much, whether you're on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, wherever you are watching or listening to this show. Please, just 2 seconds, quick little rating, review, really helps us get the show out to more people who could benefit from it. So thanks for doing that.
Love you so much.
Love you so much. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for commenting.
Okay, so I've gotten to this habit a little bit with some of these outlines for episodes. Mm-hmm. I've been writing like abstracts for it, just kind of like getting the general plot.
So fancy
in
of you.
One, it does feel a little fancy. It feels way unnecessary, but very fun.
Where does an abstract normally live?
In like peer-reviewed journals.
Yeah.
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 Which is what we consider Rally Caps to be, a peer-reviewed journal of sorts.
Because they made you do that in English class.
Yeah, yes. Yeah. Yeah. That's how we would classify the show. Yeah. We're all peers.
Yeah.
We review one another. We're basically that.
Yep.
No, but like it helps, I think, get the plot down kind of like in one go at the beginning, just to kind of keep one singular momentum forward for the episode. So the idea is like we've all started businesses to take on any work that we can get, right? Like you don't really say no to much when you're early on in your mm-hmm. career. You're just trying to like get money in the door and you're happy for that work because yeah. it's just paying work. Anyone paying you to do what you love for a living just feels like very exciting and very good. At a certain point, you have to raise prices, and then a different type of clientele gets to you, and then maybe you continue to raise prices, and you get to a point, maybe like anywhere from 5 to 10 years in the game, where you start to get like a little tired of client work because it feels creatively limiting because you have done so much and you've, you know, really busted your chops for so long trying to get to where you are that you just want some time back to yourself so that you can do the things that are creatively fulfilling. I feel like the three of us are kind of a little bit in that place. We've had, I think, some client work that we don't love necessarily, some limitations that we've had put on us that we've kind of bucked underneath a little bit. We have some trouble with that. But like I mentioned in the intro, trying to find like some silver linings around the limitations that you can have on you and why sometimes they're actually a good thing. Got a couple projects listed here that the three of us have worked on and spearheaded. We can maybe unpack how we feel about some of those and also why those limitations can actually be super helpful. So one that we did as a studio, so not just the three of us, but mm-hmm. everyone in Creative Club, was like 2 years ago, I think, was Interior Define. Mm-hmm. Eric, you kind of led the charge on bringing that project to the studio.
Yeah. Connection to John Stopher, who was on Rally Caps super early on. Mm-hmm. Interior photographer. He now works for his mom, I believe, mm-hmm. Who's Gene Stopher, who's just a legendary interior designer based out of Michigan, back in Gene's stomping grounds. Mm-hmm. But he was working with Interior Define with his wife, Mara, and needed some video work alongside. I think they were looking for that. So I stepped in for one of them early on, I think in 2020, and it was right when I got the C200 and shot it in RAW. And then looking back at that, I'm like, oh, the color was not the best. Kind of a blue cast, realizing like we need way more lights in a situation like this. Because, I mean, he was really relying on available light with his still work at that point, mm-hmm. not using strobes or anything. So yeah, it was a learning process in that. So we started doing more work alongside John and Mora. Mm-hmm. And then, the rep that we got connected with in Interior Define just started asking us to do different sit videos, which were like you show what the piece of furniture looks like and how a different sized person would sit down in it, how it would perform when you sit in it.
How does that chair perform under pressure?
Yeah, and then stand up. So it's like not, again, not creatively fulfilling work.
Yeah.
I mean, the compositions were interesting.
Yeah.
Like to build it out, because we would go to their studio and we would bring 10 foot, 12 foot white seamless paper and every light we owned.
Yeah.
And just like bathe the scene in light and then crop it to 4x3 and just try to get every single composition like identical with different sized pieces. So yeah, I mean, then we started going into different homes, and they were setting scenes inside of real homes, and then we went to their staging set where they made it look like a fake home, which was wild. Like people were in their painting sets an hour before we would step in with more furniture, and it was just like, yeah, it was pretty cool.
Very cool to see that behind the scenes of stuff like that.
Yeah, also so chaotic.
Insane. Yeah. Some of the endings of those days would get really crunchy because of time and things just getting
losing light,
pushed back,
or building a whole wall of negative to block sunlight.
Yes.
Yeah.
What was there is the house that the three of us went to.
Oh yeah,
which mansion. Was
really, really cool.
Yeah.
I feel like that one was gorgeous. Yeah. Gina and I kept sneaking off to take film photos of it all day long.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about that. Yeah.
Yeah. Where was that?
Barrington.
Barrington.
Okay. Barrington. Yeah. Fancy Chicago suburb.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, it wasn't maybe the most creatively inspiring thing.
I liked the house stuff.
The house stuff was cool.
Because there's a lot of movement and gimbal stuff.
Yes.
Where we'd set a scene. I really enjoyed that. I really liked the set stuff as well.
Yeah.
But the set videos were not at all creatively inspiring.
Yeah. Literally roll. Okay, walk, sit, unsit, leave. But, and by unsit, I mean stand up.
The furniture in those spaces, because we also shot at another huge home in another suburb, like the way the furniture looked and complementing the gorgeous interiors of these spaces, I was sitting there just being like, this is incredible portfolio footage.
Yeah.
Like that got me honestly pretty excited.
Yep.
Because whenever there's something beautiful and you like have a, like, that's when I like using a gimbal for video work, where everything is just so smooth and gorgeous. And at that point we like rigged a Ronin upside down with a C200. It was really janky, but it ended up working. Had to flip it 180 in post. But
it's actually pretty sick.
It works. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You make it work.
And stuff like that too, like the kind of benefit of it, like not only the paycheck that comes from it, which at that time was kind of a, like I mentioned, like a studio effort and was a huge catalyst for us as Creative Club to kind of furnish things the way that we wanted to and like add a lot of visual design to our space. We all kind of agreed at the start. We're like, we're just going to split this check. We're going to invest it into the studio. Work will be spread amongst us evenly. And that was a really cool, I think, like driving factor behind like taking that on in the first place, because we knew it would help like the collective good for our studio space.
Yeah.
I mean, really little did we know that Interior Define would kind of fold as a company.
Yeah.
And then we wouldn't get our furniture for 11 months.
Well, yeah. There's.
Oh, yeah. Goodness gracious. So
they got bought out and now
are
under different management or something. We haven't worked with them since.
We have not. So. No, it's been a very long time since all that happened. But even though there were some like different pain points throughout that, because there definitely were, you know, it wasn't the easiest thing splitting all of that work in what we thought was like a quote unquote even way. There is some, you know, some difficulties there for sure. But it was, I think, to your point, Eric, like showing up to a cool set where everyone else was doing what they know and watching them do these things. Like it might not have been like making a short film for us, but it was cool for us to play a part in the overall team that was there. Because it really wasn't just like, oh, like you guys are the guys. It's like, no, you're one of the vendors here today that is playing a part of making this like larger than life thing happen. That was really fun. Like, I thought that was like a cool like eye-opening thing. Like the painting thing right before was like the coolest part. It's like, oh, you guys are just literally like making this stuff as you go.
Yeah.
Like we'd finish one set and then they'd go and just like start on another thing that would like third in the queue. It's like, all right, cool.
And they're painting it a color where you're like, oh, that's gorgeous.
Yeah, we're like, oh, I can't wait to do that.
Yeah. And it's like a completely different room now.
Yeah.
Yeah, with different furnishings, yeah.
And all you did was shift 10 feet to the left, and suddenly you're like, oh, all right, this is a cool mid-century modern little home in the suburbs. Yeah.
But it can inspire you so much creatively because, you know, the whole team is swapping out rugs and different color palettes.
Yeah.
And then you working creatively with a photographer team like John and Maura, or we're then blasting fake sunlight with a Forza through a fake window and blasting it like through a plant to give texture on the wall of this fake home.
Mm-hmm.
That's where it starts to be like, and you look at the footage and you're like, this literally looks like a gorgeous house. And it's very much not.
That's like a warehouse in Chicago.
Yeah.
We just made this up.
And like, we had like a 12-foot flag above us to block the skylights and that. Yeah. I love that part. Cause then he shot it that way still. And then as we were going into video, I was like, well, what if we just start spinning the light as we push in? And so like, then the light's cascading across the wall with that texture on the wall.
It's very fun.
Yeah. And so you have those moving parts, and then John gets in the mix too, and he loves it because it's just really fun and exciting as well. Yeah. I would like to get back into more of that work, honestly.
Yeah.
If we can.
It's very fun.
Yeah.
And even though, again, like surface level, you look at that and it's like, ah, that's not maybe the most interesting thing to kind of like show up and you're sitting around waiting most of the day and then like sprinting into action for the 20 minutes that you get. And then it's just like, okay, back to waiting again. There is still something like creatively redeeming about it. And having, I think this is maybe one of the best parts of client work is like someone is just telling you what to do and making that decision for you.
Yeah.
Like you don't have to like catalyze the whole thing. It's like, you just have to show up and do what you know and do that really well. And some of that decision-making almost like relieves, I think, like a certain part of your brain and allows you to put more effort into the creative side of things.
Well, that's what's so intimidating when people start out, because they look at styled shoots. And they think, well, I have to put all this together or I have to partner with someone who can help me get to that place where I've been a part of styled shoots before, where there's a planner and a florist and all these things. And I just show up to the room and it's just immaculate.
Yeah.
And there's just this floral arrangement hanging above a couple sitting at a stunning, like, two-person table. And then you get to have that as a portfolio piece. And so it can feel really intimidating, but if you really, the name of the game there is collaboration.
Yeah.
Whether it be you do it on your own and collaborating with people who know how to make that happen, or do the extremely hard work of wearing five different hats and building that yourself. But you do that in order to potentially land the client that is doing that on set and it's paid.
Yep.
And it's not just, you know, pretending to do it,
proving
that you can in the context where it will get paid, and then making it happen. Gene, how did it work for you with interiors when you started shooting photo interiors?
A lot of interior stuff was, I wasn't doing any of the creative direction. It was really the designers who decided what vignettes they wanted photographed.
Like, did you just reach out to designers and you're like, I want to start shooting interiors, can I just shoot some of your properties? Or
yeah, that's how it happened. I think
were you shooting like coffee shops to fill the portfolio?
I think with like specifically getting into residential interior design photography, that was me reaching out, because if you don't have a body of work to show, it's not one of those genres like portraits where someone sees you take a photo of a person like, oh, can you take my photo too? You very much have to build a portfolio and then reach out. I think when I started, I worked with some designers who were up and coming. So they were also building their portfolios out. And then it kind of like snowballs and you start working with bigger designers in bigger homes. And then you start working with like stylists and like larger teams beyond just a designer being there on set. But a lot of that work, like we're talking about, I didn't have a ton of creative direction. I did with lighting, but I didn't with like, what part of the house are we going to photograph or what color scheme? Those were all predetermined before I showed up. So all I was really doing was composing and taking that photo.
But did that give you more of an ability to think in more detail about what you wanted to shoot?
Yeah, I mean, for me,
and how you wanted to do it.
Yeah. Like contextually, I'm not really doing interior design photography anymore. I am still doing like one-off jobs with designers that I've built rapport with that if they need a project photograph, mm-hmm. I'll do it. But I'm not actively looking to do more interior design work. Honestly, I don't like it, but like, I mean, like I did like that. There's a part of it where I'm not involved. Like Stephen was saying, like there's a part of my brain yes. that shuts off. Mm-hmm. I don't have to like think about all these things. I just have to like tether, light it, take a sample photo, show them, they can rework stuff. And like, you're not talking volume work either. You're talking like 12 to 15, 20 images per project for like yeah. a half day shoot. That was nice when you think about post-production.
Yeah.
The reason why I don't like interior design photography work so much, at least with where I found myself within that genre, was that I didn't have control over those things. That I was just showing up, taking photos, and that's like 4 hours, 6 hours, 8 hours, where you're just like showing up to press a shutter button. And I'm like, for me at least, especially like, I'm a dude, and most of that industry are ladies. So like, there's another aspect of that too. It's not like I'm so accustomed to our culture here in the studio where it's a bunch of people riffing off one another, having fun. But that's very much just like me in that environment, kind of like feeling a bit isolated, not only from the creative aspect of it, but even from like the environmental relational portion of it, like felt a little detached. And like a lot of these designers who are very established are not like our age, not in the 20s and 30s, or like the 40s or 50s. Yeah. So that even like a relatability, it's just like, hey, oh, your kids are in college. Cool. Like my kids are 3 and 5. So yeah. It's like, it's just like, for me, at least with my personality too, it was so good for a season of my life. But as I've like grown and diversified the type of work that I like to photograph, it's just one of those genres, just like weddings, where I don't feel super passionate to do volume work in that genre anymore. But it was good for a season.
I like that. It's perfectly appropriate with like what we're talking about today. It's like good for a season. Mm-hmm. You learn a lot.
Yeah, I learned a
ton from that stuff.
Yeah.
Because even if it gets monotonous and it gets to a point where you're like I actually want to phase this out of my business, there was still a lot of value to that, and you gained a lot from it for the time that you put into it.
But to piggyback off that as well, the work that we did with Interior Define, like the rep that we worked with, she was always really excited about creative ideas that we had.
Which was awesome.
Yeah. So that's what was really fulfilling for me in those situations, because they would set the scene and we would go in there and I'd be like, well, what if we had this little vignette right here? And she'd be like, that sounds awesome. And so then we'd shoot it and then I'd play it back and she'd be like, oh, that's incredible. Mm-hmm. And so that was really fulfilling to go about it that way, and it eventually turned into like, here's the furniture, like just put it in this space and then just do whatever you think is going to look best. Mm-hmm. Which felt like a very different experience in the moving art of it, as opposed to just still photography.
Yeah.
What they wanted it to look like.
I think video is a completely different approach.
We were doing furniture and not the design of the interior.
Yeah. The other thing, the realization I had too was, although I am stepping away from weddings, I like to work with subjects that are people.
Yeah.
For me at least. Like I like the life that an actual human brings to that shoot. And like when you do so many interior shoots where it's just a corner of a bathroom or like a living room, for me that became so boring. Yeah. Like I was like, no, I'd rather like, I could take your headshots and portraits in this interesting lighting right now. Like, oh no, I already have. I'm like, cool, I'll just take another photo of that couch. Like for me, I've realized over the years, that's why I like interior photography work, but in the hospitality space, where there's more movement, there's more energy, and it's ever-changing. There's staff. There's like, for me, like that's a space I really like. It's still interior photography, but it involves so much more lifestyle, which is like my preference in general. So, yeah.
We plan on doing actually a full breakdown of an IHG shoot that Gene spearheaded in Seattle that I came to assist with. Probably just break down everything that came from that shoot, because that was a really interesting, I think, example of like what we could create with such a small team in a small window of time. Mm-hmm. I think there's a lot of like very fun stuff and like little even like hacks that we kind of figured out throughout that day to make things look the way that we wanted without needing like a full team of people there to manage lighting, for example. I love that. The other job, or one of the other jobs that I had on here that we all worked together, that I think is a really good example of boundaries within creativity, is the Leica commercial that we shot. Because I think a lot of that had to do with adaptation and doing things at a very quick turnaround also.
Yeah.
And even though we did have a lot more creative control, really actually entire creative control over this project, there were certain elements of it that we had to like operate within just the confines of a certain space to make things happen. I'm thinking specifically about the amount of stuff that we shot in our hotel room
yeah.
in Nashville. Because that, for me at least, brought me back to like the early days of photography where you don't really have a lot of gear. You have maybe your starter DSLR camera. You have a nice space that you're renting for a day or something like that. Or it's just like the window light coming into your apartment room. And you're not really sure how to mix constants with strobes. Maybe you don't even have extra lighting. Maybe you just have this one little sliver of beautiful light and like the floorboards in your room. And you're trying to figure out a way to make a beautiful product image and just use that and grow from that experience. And when we, for context, we shot a commercial for Leica. We made a whole episode about that as well. That was in, I think, September, October of 2022.
Yeah.
And the commercial that we shot, we used our hotel room in Nashville at the Virgin Hotel. Specifically this red table, this little side table that was in the room, just there. It wasn't a prop or anything. It was just the table that was in the room. And it was like the perfect Leica red. And the light that day was gorgeous coming through the curtains. And so we utilized that side table, which was not a prop that we planned on having. We used the available light around us with no extra lighting. And we just had a blast photographing and filming with all of those components. And that just felt like such a beautiful moment because we didn't plan for any of that, but we saw it and we used years of experience to take those pieces and put them together and make it this really interesting thing that kind of became like part of like the hero images in both the commercial and the photos that we shot for them as well. I don't know why, like that moment I like think back to so fondly because it's like, I did that in like the apartments that I lived in when I was first starting my business, like all the time I'd like go throughout the house, try to just figure out like, okay, what time of day is the light best here? And where is that? And can I hold like a little like interesting, like 1 foot by 1 foot square of like marble behind this thing and just try to get like an interesting photo while I'm holding it or just placing it just so. And it just felt like so scrappy and fun. Yeah. And just like, I'm just doing this because I love the art of image making. That clicked for me a ton, just like using that moment in the hotel room because it felt like the like just so pure and cool. And it also like felt so collaborative too. Like we added motion into it with the curtains. We shot it in slow-mo. We shot it from different angles. We just like, again, using years of experience, but combining it with like the joy of those kind of like beginning, just starting out, like that energy that you have when you're first doing it. It's just like, I don't know. That was like such a fun combination for me. I loved that hotel room so much, which Gene secured for us as like, what was it? Was it hotel points, right?
It's good to have a Gene on your team.
It is.
Well, it also speaks to putting yourself in beautiful scenarios.
Yeah.
You could just be at the Holiday Inn and nothing wrong with the Holiday Inn. You know, and you might be saving some money by doing that. But the intentionality of using points to then like be in a place that is creatively inspiring really means something. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't mean that you have to incorporate whatever shoot you're doing into that hotel room, but you might come back to that place and feel inspired by something that's in there or might give you a creative idea that then you go out the next day to accomplish because you saw it in the hotel room. But I think that that happened a lot while we were shooting the documentary in the places that we stayed, allowing those spaces to inspire what we ended up making, because really all we needed for that was we just needed beautiful imagery to complement all the footage we already had of Joe from the past year, you know? And so, yeah, it was serendipity worked very well.
Yeah. We also, again, going back to like the scrappiness of the Leica project and how little time we actually had to make all of that voiceover work, became a shotgun mic mounted to our camera with a blanket over Joe's head as he did some narrations
That's
for certain
right.
parts of the commercial too, just in the That's same right. hotel yeah. room, right? Like we didn't have the ability or the time to like bring a sound booth down or like construct something or go to a studio. Like there was none of that. It was just like, how do we make this the best it can be for the resources that we have at our disposal right now?
And we knew the unfair advantage was the volume of footage we had in multiple places. Because then we, shortly after that, went to Florida with him and Maddie.
Yeah.
Like 2 days after.
Yeah.
Very shortly after. Gene, what was your favorite part of that Leica project? And I'm asking you this because, one, there's a siren coming right now. I don't know if listeners can hear that, but two.
It always feels so much louder in person.
It does. It's so loud.
I hear it back in the mix, and I'm like, oh.
I can barely hear it.
Yeah.
I got through that cashew faster than I thought, but Gene, I still want to know what your favorite part, like specifically within the idea of like creativity and limitations.
Yeah, I'm trying to recall like all the things that we did on that job when we were down there. The hotel is memorable for sure for me as well. Because it's funny about that hotel room. We milked that room. Like, some of it was the simplicity of not setting up any lights, messing with the curtains of sheer, and just, like, getting such beautiful footage out of it. And then, like, at nighttime, blacking everything out, setting lights up, holding, like boomed mic, like, an entire, like, we've taken those photos of, like, it's a set. All of a sudden we turn into a tiny hotel room. But I think, that was a fun job. Even like the way that we did his, talking head on that bench outside, which was a pain in the butt to carry the BFC around but like we moved that table multiple times because the light kept changing. If you guys remember that, like the light kept changing. So we kept moving it, but it was worth it because like when I see those photos or like look back at that footage, it was so worth putting in that extra effort. And then even thinking about like when we went down to the creek and like repositioning them constantly and getting so many different angles. But yeah, there's something beautiful about, sometimes I feel like Benjamin Button as an artist where like you work your way up and like acquiring more gear and knowledge. And then at some point in your career, and I'm sure this ebbs and flows, you begin to realize you don't need as much anymore. Mm-hmm. And you kind of like dial it back a little bit. And I feel like we're in a season maybe of our work looking that way, but like you can have 10 different lights available to you and still get away with just using one light and making it look beautiful if you know what you're doing. And I think the scrappiness of that job too, I learned a lot. Like for me, especially that time of just like my season of learning video, it was so informative and shaping like my understanding of audio, of lighting. Because for me, like I was not a videographer starting my career. I've always been a photographer. But that job specifically, I learned so much about lighting, about negative fill, about bouncing light. So it was like, the entire job was a lot of fun. But the hotel stuff was, my favorite part was Joe lying on the bed on his back and just nomming on a Snickers bar, just like
just attacking the mini fridge.
Yeah, just like going after it. I'm like, good for you, man. You do your thing, dude. Yeah, sure. By the way, we still need to film this, Joe. Like, can you focus? Like that kind of stuff was really fun. And like us three doing it together too, because I think that was the physical manifestation of our work together. And there's so many jobs we've done together so far. A lot of projects, whether it was just like some of us, all of us, but there's a lot of things we've done together. But that job specifically, for whatever reason, was like truly the pinnacle of all of our abilities coming together, our scrappiness, our creativity, our experience, and creating something that so many people saw too, which was mind-blowing to me. Like that went out into the world and was very well received.
We used the money we made on that to just offset the budget of the doc more.
Which
is great. And I think going off the Benjamin Button idea you had, I think that's true of the way we approach commercial work and our line of work when we have kind of the small team scrappy mentality. Because I feel like everybody that's in kind of the adjacent world that we work in the commercial space is like, as they keep elevating, the teams get more and more complex. The gear gets more and more complex. The budgets get higher and higher and higher. And we just don't really see a whole lot of interest in like, because you have to really be committed to that world if you want to be in it and succeeding in it. And for me personally, it feels like those stakes feel too high and it makes me feel too much pressure. And I much rather would work as our small team, being scrappy, yeah, doing things that look very similar to the things that they're creating. Maybe not as elevated, mm-hmm, surely not as elevated, mm-hmm, but really make the client go, wow, for like a fraction of the price, mm-hmm, that we would have spent on that huge production, we're getting this, and that's insane.
Yeah.
And probably more often than not at a faster turnaround.
Oh,
as
yeah,
well,
for sure.
Because of how nimble we can be.
Yeah.
Which is another time constraint with the Leica project. Like from the time that we booked it to the time of delivery, it was like 2.5 weeks, mm-hmm, or something like that. It was a very quick turnaround to get the footage. Again, we had an incredible amount of footage of Joe already that we could use as part of the project. But I mean, it was still pretty massive undertaking to, yeah, like storyboard, get the concept, shoot everything, edit everything, yeah, send a draft, and also deliver photos too, because that was part of the deal, was to send like 15 to 20 photos on top of everything else, yeah, as it was.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, just to echo what you guys have already said, I look back on that project in particular with a lot of fondness, because I think there was like a perfect marriage of all of our best qualities on that one, from pre all the way to post-production to everything in between. I think we did a really good job of being multifunctional.
Yeah.
Because when you have such like crazy boundaries and limitations set on a project and strict timelines and everything, you have to be like fluid the entire time. And we were able to like operate camera and pass on the boom pole and like do all of the different jobs that we needed to do without really needing to like,
yeah,
designate. We could just do that amongst the three of us and know that we all were rock solid in, mm-hmm, whatever it was that we were doing for that day or that specific time, which is a huge benefit to having such a like tightly tuned team.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So two other projects that we've worked on, the three of us specifically, mm-hmm, one was for a smartwatch company, mm-hmm, and the other was for a coffee company. And I kind of paired those together because I feel like both of those kind of building off of the idea of like scrappiness, run and gun from the Leica project, we carried a lot of those same principles over to Cosmo and Bloomtime, the smartwatch and coffee company respectively. Those were two very interesting projects that I think pushed us outside of what we're normally used to for commercial work, mm-hmm, in a certain sense. Yeah. Like I actually don't really know where to start specifically with either of those.
I think what's interesting about those two is that they're almost directly off of personal connections.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
So, and that's really all the commercial work we've done. There's no, you're about to release your new website, which has more of that portfolio stuff.
Hmm?
But I don't have any public-facing stuff outside of my YouTube channel that shows commercial work.
Right.
So anything that I think we collectively do on the video front that's been commercial work has all just been referral-based.
Mm-hmm.
Because we haven't really approached it being like, we want to book a ton of commercial work.
Right.
I think we could if we put up a portfolio and tried to market it that way. But it's always just been kind of like, oh yeah, that's our extra 10% that we do.
Yeah.
And we kind of get creative with how we spend that money, whether it be offsetting dock costs or furniture in the studio, yeah, or whatever that ends up being. I think the Cosmo and Bloomtime stuff, Bloomtime was an integration within a sponsorship I was doing on my YouTube channel.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I really love the idea of doing two birds, one stone on a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
Or if I have a personal connection to former clients who started a business and need a commercial, it's like, well, okay, we can do it on a really tight budget for you, mm-hmm, because this whole YouTube video where this ad is going to live is sponsored by this other brand.
Yep. Yeah.
And so we can pay the team a reasonable amount as we do this together. And then you can have a commercial walking away for a fraction of what it would have cost, you know, otherwise.
If we were just invoicing you a la carte, yeah, for this thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Whereas Cosmo wasn't that.
No.
But it was very reasonable for, yeah, the deliverables.
Absolutely.
We did.
Yeah. Bloomtime was very fun because we were using... This almost goes off the... Oh, like, this is almost like the antithesis of the concept of this episode. But yeah, like we actually had more gear than we knew what to do with.
Yeah.
And all gear that we hadn't really ever used before. With.
Yeah.
And by really, I mean ever. And I think the three that stand out to me were the Movi,
mm-hmm,
the Follow Focus, and the
Anamorphic.
The Anamorphic, which I can't remember the name.
Vazen.
Yeah.
It wasn't great.
It was... It wasn't great.
I wanted to use anamorphic, but the sponsor, like, that was the only anamorphic lens they had for rental.
Yeah.
Which, I don't know. We probably should have just gone another route, but it is what it is.
Yeah. I mean, we made it work.
Yeah.
And I think, again,
still looked absolutely gorgeous.
Oh, it looked amazing. Yeah. I'm honestly, like, super proud of how all of it turned out. Mm-hmm. That was like a fun learning experience, like watching all of us take turns on things that we had no business using.
Well, Shua just like spent a whole day figuring out the Movi. And then we realized, the Movi's like a 5-year outdated thing. Like, we shouldn't have rented this either.
It's like, we didn't need this.
No.
Specifically.
Yeah, we could have definitely used a different stabilizer, but huge learning experience then.
It was very good. I think the follow focus component of it was actually really fun.
Yeah.
It took a lot of attempts to get clean focus pulls on things, but that was like a fun addition because it's something that none of us have really ever worked with extensively. Yeah. And that it felt like a video game, honestly. Mm-hmm. Just like, all right, I'm going to get within an inch of this monitor and just like, I got my cool little wireless dial. I'm just going to try to dial it in real good. And I feel like by the end of the day, we're actually getting some pretty good pulls. But it was a really fun moment of like, it felt like childlike excitement again.
It does feel like that was probably our closest to like a traditional set, if you will, as far as gear goes, like with actually pulling focus and whatnot. Mm-hmm. I think if we were to have an opportunity like that again, and we were going to go that route with a Terra deck and pulling focus and all that good stuff, we would probably use Beans lenses in house, like arm out.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, maybe just other lens options and maybe grab a friend that has a little bit more experience in that.
Sure. Yep.
And then just go with it there, because going into a project with stuff you've like never used before,
it's not ideal.
Wouldn't recommend it.
Yeah. But it does push you.
Mm-hmm.
And it forces you to make it happen.
Yeah. And that project was admittedly so low stakes that we could have come back another day if we needed to. Right. You know, like it there weren't like strict deadlines. Like, they were just happy that we were there because, as you mentioned, this was part of an integrated sponsorship. So they were getting a great deal out of this. They weren't going to be like upset if we were like, you know what, we got a fold today, we're going to reevaluate and come back tomorrow with like a better setup that we're more comfortable with. That would have been totally fine. But it was kind of nice to have like the pressure of like, we're here, we're doing it now, figure it out. And we did.
Yeah. I remember because I don't think I tried pulling focus, but I remember it was sunny. It got sunny eventually. So I was trying to build basically a video village, but with a neg, trying to make for like shade for you guys, so you guys can actually see the screen. Yeah. Or like at one point, I don't know why, I was building that sound booth in the corner of the living room for the voiceover. But like that's stuff we learn from YouTube videos. That's stuff we learn from previous things that we've done in the past. So I think just tying back to what we were talking about earlier, just leaning on our experience up to that point. I feel like every job we've done together, the iterations of those jobs change and we get better because we're just practicing those skills. But what I really remember was just being obsessed about that assault bike in the garage and just like looking at it and be like, well, I want to ride that thing, but I shouldn't because I don't know. But I want to ride that thing so badly, but I shouldn't.
It was so, his home gym setup.
It was sweet. Nice. It was sick.
It was very nice. Yeah, that was our green room was his home gym.
That's where we're staging everything. And then like the Cosmo job, it was really cool because we were able to lean on our YouTube video making experience too. When you were doing that was like setting up a talking head for a YouTube video. Mm-hmm. Like, so that was cool to see that, we know how to do this. This isn't far from what we normally do.
It was all in our wheelhouse.
It was like, so those are things that, although they may have been jobs that we weren't super either like familiar with, like genre wise, but technically speaking, we were able to do all those things because we have the experience. It was really fun.
Use the gear we all have already.
Yeah.
There was no rentals. We were all very familiar with everything we were using.
Yeah.
Flying the R5 on a gimbal. Mm-hmm. And then we're shooting in the studio and at my house.
Yep.
And
yep.
We cut all those corners and used our unfair advantages of the things we already had at our disposal to make it cheaper for the client, but then also just ease of use for us and capitalizing on what we used up here, we used downstairs.
Yep.
Yeah.
Like, we've already built it. Why not use it and offer it to people?
Yeah, yeah.
That was a huge selling point for Cosmo in particular. It was like, we actually, in our pitch deck to them, outlined all of the cost savings we could provide them, which I think was actually a really cool angle for us. We had like estimated budgets for each of those things and then just crossed them out. We're yeah. like, hey, with us, you're not paying this for yeah. music licensing, for locations, for actors, for right. all these things mm-hmm. that we could just do in-house, which I think was a big reason why they were into it in for the sure. first place. Mm-hmm. And I also loved like the whole, I don't know, like it felt like there was, it was kind of a split with Cosmo. It was like they had a clear idea of what they wanted. So again, like, you know, we didn't have to worry about like creating the concept. It was like, we're showing up to shoot, but they were also very open to our ideas. So we came in with like almost like a sandbox where it was like, okay, this is the area that you can play in. You don't really have to create the sandbox, but once you get in, just have fun. Do your thing. You don't have to catalyze the whole shoot. You don't have to come up with the thing.
Yeah.
Find the whoever. Like, we could just show up, do what we love, and then offer these suggestions and be excited by what we were seeing in camera to then ideate further and continue to capitalize on it. And they're just like, yes, yes, yes. This is awesome. This is amazing. And that affirmation is always so comforting because, like, once the client is excited by your ideas, then you really feel like you're gaining momentum. Yeah. Like it might start sometimes with like, these are the strict boundaries. This is it. This is what you're doing. Just show up to set and deliver this thing for us. But if you step outside of that zone a little and you're like, hey, what about this? Mm. Like at Interior Define too, like, hey, what if we move the light around a little bit? Hey, yeah. what if we do this, that, the other? And they're like, oh my gosh, I love that. And
that's what
asks that them. Gets like the wheels really turning.
Yeah, that's what gets them to want you to come back as well. Mm-hmm. It's like, well, that's your secret sauce. If you can impress them with those kinds of ideas mm-hmm. within their structure.
I almost wonder sometimes if like, yeah, you know, clients need these deliverables and companies need specific things. But you kind of imagine that some of the people asking for these things also want something more creative too. Yeah. And they're also yearning for something yeah. a little bit more yeah. interesting than just the flat rate deliverables. And it's just XYZ 9x16, crop it to these things. It's like, no. What if we offer something a little bit more interesting?
Fun.
Mm-hmm. Something yeah. a little more fun.
Yeah.
Which I think is a testament to our work and also who we are on set, like mm-hmm. the three of us and like the chemistry that we have. Even going back to what you said earlier, Gene, about like, I don't want to be in interior design shoots as much because I don't feel like I can have as much fun or like yeah. joke around as much. Like it's really important to have that chemistry
yeah.
on set, whatever it like video, photo, whatever the client is, whatever the product is, just having that kind of that rapport amongst all of you, I think loosens whoever your contact for the business is up a little bit because they see you having fun. Yeah. They want to be a part of it too. And it's just like this really good cyclical effect where like you get everybody on the same page and then mm-hmm. everybody wins.
Yep.
Cool. Right. Well,
great.
That seems like a good stopping point, I think, for this episode then. We will... I don't know what you just triggered, but what's... You don't know either?
I know which one it was.
Oh, you do, okay.
You guys don't know. I know which one it was.
Yeah, like we mentioned at the beginning, this is going to be a two-parter. This was the first part talking more about creativity itself and putting boundaries up against it and how you can work with them, work around them, and maybe actually be freed up by those limitations a little bit. Next week, we'll be talking more about the interpersonal side of boundaries, the relational components there, working from home versus working in a studio, and why boundaries are so important in both of those situations. So,
you like therapy?
That one will be more like therapy for sure. Nice. This is a little more cut and dry talking about, specific projects, but I think next week will be just like good chilling, good hangs. So, thanks for being here. Thanks for watching, listening. Again, if you're new around here or you've been around for the last 3 years Rally Caps has existed, if you could leave a rating, a review, and share it with a friend, we'd really appreciate that. And we'll hopefully see you in the next episode.
Goodbye.
Bye.
We're waving.